Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app. Coming live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Chatting hoops right here on 95.7 The Game, and it's presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi. One price, 5 years guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. Okay, he didn't even just say, oh, Steph. Steph is the one that will be sort of understood, but 10 years too late. And then he followed up. He goes, they'll never understand. I mean, is this in perpetuity? No matter what happens, like, we're never going to fully understand the gravity of Steph Curry. I appreciate this about Andre Iguodala. There is, tucked into all of this, a little concern for the Warriors. And you know, Andre, I think, has spoken the truth a lot over the last few years. And he strikes, without having all the quotes in front of me, he strikes a chord of all of this stuff. You know, it's not to take credit away from Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr, Joe Lacob, but it's Chase Center, it's the value of the team, it's the championships, it's Kevin Durant coming, it's the fact that LeBron is even considering coming, all of these things. He's like, it's one thing. It's Steph. That's it. It's just Steph. That's what makes all of this go. Maybe that's what he means. They'll never understand.
And maybe they'll understand, but not at the same time give the level of appreciation. And I know that you just said earlier, like, you know, he's entered the top 10. And I wonder if you go outside this market, maybe it's 10 years from now, and you look back at this run, I'm sure even now there are many people across this country who would not put him in the top 10. And you would look at his four titles and you'd say, well, two of them were checkbook championships. You needed Kevin Durant to come in and deliver those two. I think that there's more naysaying that goes on about this run outside the market than it does here. And that is partly, I think, what he's referring to, because, you know, you'll never understand how great he is, because you look at, well, Iguodala won the finals MVP the first time, and then Kevin Durant won the next two finals MVP. So if you're not here in this market, you probably don't have the same appreciation.
I just asked AI who the consensus top 10 NBA players are of all time. You think Steph Curry's on the list?
No.
Yeah.
According to AI?
AI.
Probably not.
AI's not on the list either, though, by the way.
Either AI.
Yeah.
Andre Iguodala or Allen Iverson?
Correct. Number one, Michael Jordan. Number two, LeBron James. I love how AI is like, this is the list. These are the 10.
Right.
It's widely agreed upon. No, it's not. But anyway, Jordan, LeBron, Kareem, Magic, Russell, Wilt, Larry Bird, Tim Duncan, Shaq, Kobe.
Honestly, I cannot really, like, if you're going to strike one of them to get Steph on, we could spend a whole week of shows on that.
It'd be tough.
Right. And, like, Kobe, yes. LeBron and Michael, sure. I think Wilt and Kareem, absolutely. Bill Russell, I didn't really watch, but, I mean, all he did was defend and win. And, you know, Larry and Magic, and you start going through that list, it's hard to find a spot for the chef.
You can't argue with it, but you also can't. I don't think you can really argue Steph if he's on the list.
Right.
But again, what I think we do out in the world is we, and rightfully so, we elevate him by some of these people because these people are all huge. They're absolutely huge. Like, Shaq is a better basketball player than Steph? Preposterous. It's preposterous.
Right. I mean, obviously, it's different basketball players, and I just think about, for me, this debate is a lot like the best quarterback debate. Well, you need to talk about the situation and the play call and the rest of it. So if you take Shaq, for example, right now, as a 19-year-old coming out of LSU, Here comes Shaquille O'Neal, 7'1", 285 pounds of highly skilled big man. He's not going to be as impactful in this NBA. Or if you take Steph Curry and you plop him down next to Bob Cousy in 1961, well, we don't even have the three-pointer. And by the way, the long shot is frowned upon. So, all right, is Steph going to be as good in 1961 as he is now? Of course not.
Let's go to Will, who's driving to Tahoe. Good on you, Will. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, guys. Well, I think one of the things is thinking of Steph purely as a shooter. I mean, just a sense of it being frail when he came in. He's built his body every single year, and he's one of the best at driving to the hole. I mean, there's just some of the drives through big men, and he's tough. Remember when he boxed out Dwight Howard? I mean, he's a great rebounder as a guard, too. So that sense of him, you know, like what you're saying is, well, he does what we do. We're not built like that, and we can't bang with Dwight Howard. I think he's just much more of a physical presence than he used to be. And then, I mean, even if he's not hitting his threes, he's dangerous. So I just think he's just way more well-balanced and tough than people tend to give him credit for.
Well, thanks. I think there's so much nuance to the things that he's doing, and I always give a lot of love in sports to people who do really, really good things that we're not seeing. Like, we don't see it on TV. You don't see what Steph is doing off the ball. You don't see what a great left tackle does in football. You're watching the ball. So you don't see it. And I think that that's huge. And for sure, that's a huge part. I can't tell you how many, whether it's scouts, whether it's head coaches that put game plans together for the last 10 years have all talked about the hardest thing for our players to do is guard Steph Curry. It's the hardest player to guard in the league.
Because he's not a guy who, when he has the ball, is the only time that he's a threat. So when he doesn't have the ball, he's equally dangerous because there are multiple screens being set. He's running around like a madman, and his timing on his cuts are so precise that, you know, even if it's two passes away from him maybe getting open, he's already setting up the defender to get to his spot. And then once he gets the ball, good luck trying to stop him. And I keep going back to the Olympics and watching the sequence in that fourth quarter of the gold medal game where he hits a three, then it's a pump fake, side dribble, hits a three, then he hits another three, and then the ridiculous one where he's like fading right with two guys on him and he hits a three. When he starts getting in that mode, he is unguardable, and his unguardability counts for 3 points, not just two.
888-957-9570 is the number. Also, we'll let everybody know we're sitting here, we're watching Yaxel right now. Yaxel is quickly becoming a fascinating person to me.
Yep.
I'm not sure what to think yet. I mean, I love what we're watching in terms of basketball, but even, you know, when we spoke yesterday to Chance McMillan, his teammate on the Summer League, one of the first things he said about him, he's like, yeah, he's a good basketball player, he's a big goofy guy. And Yaxel loves to talk, which is great. So do we. I'm not saying that this is an issue, but Yaxel is clearly a, well, he likes to poke, he likes to prod, he likes to S-talk, he likes to spar verbally with people. That can be challenging for rookies. So, I think he's up for it. You know, his game looks great. It's at the Summer League, so whatever. But at the same time, I don't know if we've had enough of a conversation yet about the personality of Yaxel.
And I just wonder about the fit and, you know, going back to, for example, Jordan Poole, who I think was a guy who was animated early in his career, another Michigan product, but he was in a spot where he wasn't really a plug-and-play guy. He started in the G League, and he developed, and by the time he came up, he was, you know, definitely feeling himself, and they won a title, and he got paid, and we all know how the ending happened, but it was a little bit of a different sort of a swagger than Yaxel Lendeborg, and yeah, it's early, it's Summer League, and we don't know how it yet will mesh with the veteran team that they have, but just hearing the Andre Iguodala sound throughout the course of the day, Yaxel reminds me of Andre Iguodala. Like, I think that
really?
that is, for me, if I'm Yaxel's advisor, I'm looking at Andre Iguodala and saying, this is the player that you should try to model yourself after, a guy who could score at all three levels, elite passer, great defender. That is, and they kind of have similar physiques, you know, 6'8", a guy who can play the three, but also ball handle and maybe play some four at times. That to me would be maybe not his ceiling, but yeah, maybe his ceiling. Because Andre Iguodala earning his career, he was a phenomenal scorer.
Yeah, a great defender always, though. I think from what we're seeing so far, Yaxel might have a little ways to go there. But speaking of Yaxel Lindeborg, is one of the things that Mike Dunleavy weighed in on. He just did an interview with ESPN during the Summer League game short time ago, and we have some of the comments. We'll play them for you in just a second, but I do want to make sure everybody's getting through. So let's go to Carl in Oakland. Hi, Carl. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Love the show. You make a lot of sense most of the time.
Oh, good.
I just wanted to throw something on the table. And when you look at this, at the number you're throwing around and at the personalities, think about an analogy of physicians. There's a whole bunch of GPs. There may be some great GPs. There's a whole bunch of specialists. And then you've got surgeons that do...
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Brain surgery and do surgery on people's hands. Those two guys are a very special breed. And I think what we're really talking about is Steph Curry being in the class of a brain surgeon.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the few surgeries I haven't had.
Not yet. Give yourself time.
Thoroughly.
No, Carl, thanks. I get what you're saying. And maybe that is part of what Andre Iguodala is saying. He's that special because he's in a different category. He probably should have his own category.
Right. Well, he does, which is greatest shooter of all time. And
yeah, but you know, that bothers people sometimes.
It can bother you, and somewhere out there is somebody who probably is the best surgeon in the world. They don't really have, like, stats on that. That's not a stat, but somewhere out there, there is that. And as I mentioned, Steph's got an 858 three-pointer lead on James Harden. So you can say, oh, Reggie Miller, better shooter, or, you know, Kyle Korver, or whatever you want to do, but the stats would prove otherwise. And so, yeah, you think about if Steph wasn't a basketball player, what could he have done with that hand-eye coordination? And I think surgeon is a great call.
Yeah, like, and golfer.
Yeah.
That's why he's so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I just think when you refer to him, it's a weird compliment, the greatest shooter of all time. It's accurate, but it dismisses a lot of other things that he does.
I get what you're saying, but I'm not just saying that, like, full stop, that's all he is. If you want to say, as a guard, as a point guard, where does he rank? Well, he's not the greatest point guard of all time. He's up there, and, you know, he's the greatest player ever to come out of Davidson. And
why is he not the greatest point guard of all time?
Because I think that there are better point guards, guys who are, you know, like John Stockton, for example.
You think he's better than Steph Curry?
Yes, as a point guard, absolutely.
Well, you're sort of talking about a traditional point guard that doesn't even really exist in the league
anymore. I don't even think that Steph Curry is the Warriors' point guard, which is kind of my point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Draymond Green, a lot of times, is the point guard. And so, like, all the labels you want to put on Steph Curry, some of them are limiting. Greatest shooter of all time, for me, is not limiting.
Let's bounce through some sound because we have some new stuff, quite frankly, and it is straight from Summer League and Mike Dunleavy. And he's talking to your boy, Dave McMiniman.
I love it.
With ESPN. And so obviously there were kind of two questions to ask. Let's start with the Yaxel Lindeborg question of Mike Dunleavy.
I think he seems like just a seamless fit into how you can play both offensively and defensively. He's playing with our summer league team right now, but as we transition with the veteran team, we think he'll be able to fit right in and contribute. So having a guy of his stature, experience level, size, all that stuff is going to bode well for us.
Yaxel, seamless fit. Mike Dunleavy sold.
Yeah, and he should be sold. He picked him. I mean, if he came out and said, I felt like a reach when we took him, and seeing him out there in summer league, I'm really not sure, guys. I think I may have buyer's remorse.
All right. How does this one grab you? Mike Dunleavy was asked about the roster and how close it is to being completed. Take a listen to Mike Dunleavy's answer on ESPN.
The NBA fans and Warriors fans want to know, is there any lingering pieces of business that's floating out there that you feel like you have to take care of before you can put the summer to bed?
Yeah, I think we're getting close to finalizing the roster here, so we're looking forward to that finish point.
Maybe Draymond Green, maybe, and we'll see beyond that.
We'll see. We shall see.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate you.
Take care.
We shall see.
Lingering pieces of business.
Yep.
I mean, is that
doing anything for you?
Is LeBron James a lingering piece of business? I suppose.
I mean,
it's been lingering.
Yeah. What else would you refer to him as?
I mean, he's the GOAT, and it's more than like a lingering piece of business. Like, for example, I've got this receipt in my car for my dry cleaning that I dropped off 6 weeks ago.
Oh, you just reminded me. My daughter has some dresses at the dry cleaner. They've been there too long.
I've got two shirts and a pair of nice slacks. That's a lingering piece of business. Mm-hmm. I need to swing by and drop the $15 to get my dress shirts and my pants. That's not LeBron James.
Why not? I mean, that's their business.
And it's lingering. I get that.
Did that do anything for you?
It did a lot for me.
Read the room. Does Mike Dunleavy, you know, Kenny Atkinson's been running around cat ate the canary. Ooh, we might get LeBron James. And then Shams is over there going, the league circles. What I'm being told, Cleveland and then Philly and Miami. And to me, Miami has felt completely like a stand-in.
Mirage, yeah.
Yeah, to this entire production. Listen to it again, though. Does it feel like Mike Dunleavy is kind of going along with what we've been saying the last few days, under promise and over deliver? Or does he feel kind of good?
The NBA fans and Warriors fans want to know, is there any lingering pieces of business that's floating out there that you feel like you have to take care of before you can put the summer to bed?
Yeah, I think we're getting close to finalizing the roster here, so we're looking forward to that finish point.
Maybe Draymond Green, maybe. We'll see beyond that.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. We shall see.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate you.
Take care.
We'll see. We'll see. We shall see.
Well, that to me, when he talks about we feel like we're close to finalizing the roster, that feels like either we get LeBron or we don't. And beyond that, the way I'm hearing him is that's the only lingering piece of business. It's not an Anthony Davis whopper of a trade, and it's not like we're going to go out and get Trey Murphy or we're not going to bring back Kuminga. It feels like the only lingering piece of business is that.
Well, of course.
They're close to finalizing the roster.
That doesn't mean if they don't get him that they won't sign anyone else. I mean, you got to have people. You got to fill the roster out with somebody.
Right, but you've got, you know, a handful of these guys in summer league, like your LJ Criers. I don't believe he's signed yet. And, you know, so you could backfill your roster with some of the guys you already have right now, including maybe Graham EK, the kid out of Gonzaga who I like.
You're really firing people up right now.
I mean,
super, super, super fired up.
Big body, good center.
Yeah.
I like the player, Mark.
Okay. Not carrying four centers.
Right, yeah, but
not carrying four centers.
And you have Al Horford.
Right.
Is Porzingis the center, I guess?
Of course he is.
Technically.
7'3".
But he plays the wing. Like,
no, he doesn't.
Okay.
I mean,
and you got Charles Bassey.
Yeah, and Charles Bassey. You got three centers. We're good here.
Right, okay.
We're not doing four centers.
Okay. I mean, last year, essentially, you did toward the end of the year when you had Bassey and Post and you had Horford and Porzingis.
Post was hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
And you had TJD for a while. And so, yeah, I agree with you. You're probably not doing four centers, but This is a little bit of a different construct.
Brian in Oakland next. Hi, Brian. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'm shocked at the disrespect that Steph Curry is getting in his own town. It's wild to not have him immediately in your top three at the minimum for point guard. And I'll say this to make it quick. You can exchange him with anybody you want, and they can't do what he did on this team, but he can definitely do better on their team. For example, Stockton, overrated. You put Curry on that team, he fires that team up.
Brian, thanks. I had a feeling, and I know you didn't mean to necessarily do this, I had a feeling that this was going to activate our listening audience a little bit.
Right.
I hear people very often, you get to look at it however you want, but to me, if you want to get into an all-time point guard debate, sure, you can sort of say, it's changed, it's quirky. You know, that's not a point guard to me. Well, I don't know. Who gets to define who a point guard is? That is his position. And therefore, Magic Johnson and Steph Curry are, my opinion, the only answers you can give as far as best point guard of all time. That's one and two or two and one.
Right, and you say that's his position like we're talking about baseball or football.
Yeah,
where
it is.
It really isn't. And Steve Kerr has come up with positionless basketball, and that's basically what they do. So
right, but
we can get into the semantics of that's his position and or that's not his position. Draymond Green, what position does he play?
Well, he's forward.
He plays center a lot. He plays center on defense, and he plays point guard on offense. And so,
right, but for the purposes of conversations, if you're going to start talking about that, you're not going to let the change of the game and positionless basketball make you decide that John Stockton was better than Steph Curry.
I'm just talking about what a point guard, if you want to just talk about a point guard, like I think about Jason Kidd, a guy who, for the majority of his career, was a dribble and pass guy.
But that's our perspective because of what point guard used to be. It's not right. That. It's not. It isn't that anymore.
Well, what is point guard now?
Like, I mean, it's just a name, but it is what it is. You know what I mean?
And like, I think that when you call him a point guard, for me, you are limiting what he actually is as a player because he's a point guard. He's also a shooting guard, depending on who's out there with him. And so, yeah, when I invoke the name of John Stockton, I'm not saying he's a better player than Steph Curry. I'm just looking at what I think of point guard-wise. Magic Johnson was a point guard, but then you go to the 1980 NBA Finals, and what happened? He played center. Because Kareem was out.
And
so,
he's 6'9".
Right, and they had no other option. I mean, Michael Thompson might have been on that team, or you know, Sven Nader off the bench.
Sven Nader is a name I have not heard in a minute.
The Lakers always had one giant, big, white stiff in his sweatpants toward the end of the bench.
Now they've got about five of them.
Right, no doubt.
That's exciting.
I mean, it's a role.
Yeah. Anyway, I think the larger thing that we're sitting here talking about, Mike Dunleavy, seems to be keeping it a little bit more close to the vest than the other, whether it's Pobos or GMs or whatever. Atkinson's been out there. Bob Myers has been out there. Stein's talking about Finchy coming out and talking. I know some of these guys are head coaches. Some of them are GM. Some of them are just consultants, whatever. But what I sense from Dunleavy there is as soon as McMenamin asked the question that got to roster construction, he totaled up. Totaled up, he got quick, and he had no interest really in doing the conversation anymore. It's kind of true all off season long. The Warriors, they don't want to talk about roster construction. Every time that got asked in the previous press conferences is when Dunleavy and Kerr started talking about, no matter who's on the roster, got to play better, got to stop turning the ball over. And we want all of our guys back. They just don't want to get into the roster of it all. And I get it. They might not get the guy. But to a degree, I sort of, I don't know. I wonder why they're not a little bit more forthcoming in this moment.
Because what can they say other than, like, the honesty of it all, the truth serum would be, yeah, we are all in on LeBron James. And the follow-up would be, oh, okay, if you don't get LeBron James, what then? And the response might be, we don't really have much in the way of a plan B. So you don't want to answer, and you've been saying it all along, under-promise and over-deliver, and so that's been their approach. And if they don't get LeBron James, then they might not get anybody at all. And if you haven't promised that, oh, this roster is going to look a lot different and we're going to bring in this, we're going to bring in that. Well, they haven't said that. And it might be the case where you get nothing.
What an interesting time we're in right now. And I don't necessarily mean that in the best of ways. Does anybody else kind of just feel a little, stuck in the mud? I feel like everything in sports right now is surrounding the word waiting. Here's what I'm waiting for. I am waiting for the trade deadline. I'm waiting for the trade deadline so that the Giants can move this story forward. We are all waiting for LeBron James to make a decision. Sure we are. We're waiting for him to announce his decision. And then, the anxiety that goes with that around the NFL, which, I'm going to be out next week, and when I get back, we're probably going to go down to Santa Clara and get started for training camp. But I don't know. It feels like a tough spot right now. And a little anxiety about the year 2026 as a whole in terms of what the Bay Area sports fan is kind of being provided.
I get that. And I think it's always the case unless, like, you get to July. And the only time that that's not the case is if you are fresh off a Warrior Parade or if your baseball team happens to be really good and in the mix. And so right now, the Giants are 14 below. And the only thing to look forward to is the trade deadline. Who goes? Who gets promoted? And then after that, like, what happens with the manager and Buster Posey and whatnot? And for football, yeah, we're kind of in that dead spot where camp is still a couple, 2-3 weeks away. And then we get into preseason games, which you don't necessarily love. We got joint practices where they might have a scuffle with the Chargers down there in LA. And we're still a good almost 2 months away from real football. So this is always kind of the quote unquote dead spot in the schedule. And, right now we've got Yaxel and they're on their way to losing.
Yeah, they're getting their butts kicked tonight.
Memphis is on a 35-13 run since halftime.
Stop him, Yaxel.
It's over. He's out. Oh, he's out okay. of the game.
All right, never mind.
Friend of the program, Chance McMillan with 5 points off the bench.
Okay, great.
Which is exciting, but yeah. I think this is always a dead spot unless your baseball team is actually good.
I get it. I don't mean it about the calendar. And I know people are like, this is a slow period in sports. I don't even mean that. I sort of mean like what is being provided to the Bay Area sports fan in 2026. And it just feels like a lot of waiting, too much waiting. You know what I mean? The Giants declared themselves so early as a very poor team, having a very poor season. I mean, it feels like I've never, ever watched a baseball season where we're talking about the trade deadline the first half of June.
Right.
The first half of June, this baseball team has got the trade deadline out there.
And talking about, like, what are they going to sell? Not like, hey, if this thing continues, what are they going to buy at the deadline?
I mean,
and Yaxel, by the way, still in. He just had a grown man and one
out of bed.
Which, to your point, like, this is the bright spot right now in Bay Area sports. Yaxel in a Vegas gym.
Yeah, Yaxel playing people not his size in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's great. But even the Warriors,
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Go back to last year. As soon as the injuries happened, it already accelerated a conversation into years into the future. And then now there's this LeBron thing. July 14th, and no end in sight. I mean, Shams will tell you it's coming either tomorrow or the day after or the week after, or the month after. And it's funny because I often think about the way some of these sports leagues kind of build out the schedule. The NFL does such a good job of this to where they're kind of able to keep themselves in the news every month or so. Obviously, not every day, not every week, but they piece it all together from the combine and then the draft and then OTAs and then training camps and then preseason and then the season and then playoffs.
Free agency too, yeah.
Just rinse, repeat. The big stories in sports have gotten stuck in the mud. They've gotten stuck in the mud. I was talking to Ephraim about this on Sunday. The World Cup has only got two matches left. And LeBron's free agency looms at some point. That is a moment when Major League Baseball should be ready to step forward and go, okay, this is our time. So I asked him, I go, hey, what are the big stories in Major League Baseball this year? There's nothing. What are we sinking our teeth into with Major League Baseball right now? I don't even know what it is. I get locally, everybody's just either sort of like upset or bored or what have you with what's going on with the Giants. But man, I don't even know if I can zoom out and bite into some great story. Shohei and Aaron Judge last year, whatever.
We're just kind of in, it's interesting with baseball, I think, because some of the great stories this year are from, you know, Tampa Bay would be one, and, you know, Milwaukee, smaller market teams that are probably not moving the needle from a national standpoint. Like, the White Sox are a great story. They were dead last year, and they're actually having a good season, and they've got, you know, 67 games left to play and whatnot. But in general, like, the Dodgers are good again, yawn. And I think the big dark cloud that hangs over everything, and you're starting to see more stories about it, is what's coming next year, because it feels like the lockout is all but a guarantee for Major League Baseball. So even if you get excited about this year, and there's some stuff to be excited about, by the time you get all the way around in the winter, it feels like bad news is coming.
Well, I think the lockout is inevitable, just so everyone understands, though. The lockout starts in, like, December. A lockout is inevitable. Missing the season, I do not think that's necessarily inevitable. In fact, I could see that thing getting pushed a little bit. I think Major League Baseball looks at that as a deadline. Partially for the reason that we're discussing right now. They know. Baseball, if they don't start the season relatively on time next year, they are doing themselves an unbelievable disservice. And I don't know if they'll recover. I really don't.
We've said this in the past, and they have. But
yeah, but they cheated to do it, and that won't work this time.
And there is definitely momentum now with the pitch clock and a bunch of young stars, especially this year. We have one in Bryce Eldridge. It feels like baseball is rising in popularity, yet you read some of the stories about owners are kind of, you know, behind the scenes hyping up the negative parts of the sport. I don't know if it's just to keep values down or to keep the players at bay, but it feels like the disconnect between players and ownership has never been wider.
Well, look, to me, it's much more like sports is about stars. And I know that last night was fun. I was driving back from Silverado, didn't really get a chance to watch it. From what I understand, it flowed really well. It was a good story, but bad camera angles on Netflix. That's what most people said about the Home Run Derby. I'm sure it is a good story. I'm not against this. Don't take this from me. I'm just looking at sports from 10,000 feet. I'm sorry. It's not good that Jordan Walker won the Home Run Derby. I really apologize to you, those of you who play fantasy baseball. Nobody knows who Jordan Walker is. Sorry. That's not good that he beat Kyle Schwarber. Nobody knows who that is.
It's not bad, but
it's not good.
Well, what's not good to me is the fact that it was on Netflix. Put the camera angles aside. Like, it wasn't, and I know that younger people, whatever, they don't care about network television and cut the cord and all the rest of it, but your big Monday night marquee event was on Netflix, and I didn't even know it was on Netflix until Grandy told me yesterday about 4:30.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it being on Netflix. There is a different conversation that we could have about why is the All-Star break. Ephraim asked me this the other day, and I didn't have a good answer for him, except for I tried. I wonder what you think of this. Why the hell is the All-Star break on a Monday and Tuesday and a Wednesday? Why is the All-Star game happening now? It's Tuesday.
Right.
It's Tuesday.
It's because the weekends are the best dates for Major League Baseball. So you play Sunday.
That's what I told them.
You come back on Friday.
Right. Like the giveaway. The owners don't want to give away the giveaway.
Correct.
Like there's probably a Grogu doll or something coming this week, and you don't want to give that away.
My bigger issue is not with the day of the week, but it's the placement where this thing should be the Monday and Tuesday right after the NBA Finals. So the NBA Finals are a fixed position, so you look at whenever Game 7 is going to be, and then you put your All-Star game there ahead of the 4th of July, and you go ahead and slap it toward the middle of the season, and that way you can have that whole week to yourself. Because after the NBA, if we didn't have the World Cup, the NBA Finals end, and now you've got another three-week slog until the All-Star game.
Thank God for the World Cup.
Right.
Thank God.
Exactly.
I mean, those of you, 408 just texted in. Are you guys not following the World Cup? Hello? Are you not listening to the show? We've been constantly talking about the World Cup.
Yep.
We're down to three. That's the problem. We got two matches to go.
Well, there's three matches if you partake in the third place game, which, again, bet the over.
Spain versus Argentina. I'm sorry, France versus Argentina.
France and England for third. And
France versus Argentina.
I don't think we've sorted out our little bet that we're going
to
make.
No, remember, loser has to go on a hike.
Oh, that's right.
No, we can
I'm
do
on a hike.
We can do a real one.
Yeah, let's figure it out. Next segment. Let's brainstorm.
I mean, let's. Yes. And in fact, we can throw it out to the audience if you want. I mean, whether it's on YouTube, Twitter, the text line, or 888-957-9570, Dibs and I would like to wager, but not with money. Like, loser has to do blank or winner gets blank on England versus Argentina tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm on Argentina.
I'm taking England.
And old Jude over here is on England.
Yeah.
The Three Lions.
Number 10, Jude Bellingham.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I like those English. I like that team this year. I like them. The coach is all surly and mad. That's fun. Did you see
is that Tuchel?
Did you see the post-match interview?
No, from the last one?
Yes.
No, I missed
they
it.
They beat Norway, come from behind, and he was like, we got a great result. But other than that, we sucked.
Yeah,
I mean, he was on his team after the match. I like that guy.
Thomas Tuchel.
Let's go to PK in Union City. Hey, PK, what's going on?
Hey, hello.
What's up?
I listened to your show with me.
Thank you.
I love the Warriors. I don't have a local football team. I gave up when the Raiders left. But you're talking about how there's nothing to talk about now in sports. But you know what? The Valkyries are in third place right now.
They've won seven in a row, PK. By the way, before you go on, the hair on the back of my neck stands up a little bit when we say this in our business, that there's, quote, nothing to talk about. There's always a ton to talk about. What I'm saying is I feel for the Bay Area sports fan, 2026 is kind of threatening right now to feel a little stuck in the mud, and some of the teams that are supposed to be holding up their end of the bargain right now are not doing so. That's kind of what I'm getting at, PK.
Okay, let me go a little bit further.
Sure.
In saying that it took the WNBA all these years to become sufficient to talk about. So I think the opportunity is there to talk about them, especially right now when you're talking about a team that in their first year they made the playoffs. And in their second year, they're out there and they brought back some players. And excuse me, but the Valkyries are not only the only game out there, but right now I kind of like to hear just a little bit of conversation on women's basketball in the Bay Area.
Fair enough, PK. PK, yeah, thank you very much. Listen, I get it. They've won seven in a row. I think we do talk about Valkyries some.
Fever tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't, you know, right now, what is the massive, compelling topic that everybody wants to break down? I'm not sure. I've said this already a couple of times this year. For example, and I'm sorry, what's her name? Is it Kathy Engelbert?
Yep.
What's her name?
Yep, the commish.
Commissioner of the WNBA did a big old screw-up over the weekend in Tahoe by skipping out on Patrick the way that she did. And that's my bigger issue with the WNBA. People will be like, why don't you talk WNBA more? And sometimes I'm like, because I sometimes feel like the WNBA doesn't want us to. Stir that around in coffee and take a drink. I'm serious.
Yeah.
It's not all, there's this, the defense mechanism that's up. And I get it, but it kind of makes it hard sometimes.
Yeah, it does. And when your front-facing commissioner doesn't really want to, you know, talk about the league on a national platform where people who aren't fans would be exposed to the product, then that doesn't help.
Are we watching the World Cup? How about if we go live to Dan Dibley, my friend, with this World Soccer Championship update?
And it's brought to you by Jack's Bar and J-Town Pizza, your destination for international soccer action in San Jose's Japantown. Well, we were watching earlier as France and Spain contested the first semifinal, and Spain with 2, France with 0. Spain moves on to the final, and France will have to go to the third place game to try to get that third place medal. But tomorrow, Willard versus Dibs. Dibs versus Willard. It's England taking on Argentina from Atlanta. And that's your World Soccer Championship update brought to you by Jack's Bar and J-Town Pizza, your destination for international soccer action in San Jose's Japantown.
You're not going to believe what somebody just texted in that we should do for our bet.
I'm sure I will believe it.
Well, I mean, you might believe it, but oof. Okay, there's some good ones coming in. We're sponsored by Alameda County. It's Willard and Dibs.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.